If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
Wine comes from each place. Terroir, its own soil, its own location. You may like what you get in Bordeaux. I certainly like Bordeaux. You know, I love Burgundy too. But do I compare that to Napa Valley Cabernet or Napa Valley Merlot? No, never, because they're two totally different things.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 590. This week we feature Cyrus Hazard, Executive Vice President, Crocker and Star, Napa Valley. You can always tell successful business leadership by the kindness of the people they employ. They smile a lot, and they love what they do. Crocker and Star is that kind of business. It doesn't hurt that folks who work with wine tend to be truly happy. Pam Star has built that very business, and Cyrus Hazard is the Executive Vice President of the winery. I caught up with Cyrus during the crazy busy week known as Premier Napa Valley. We chatted in between hard rainfalls, but the best is we laughed a lot. You can also hear Cyrus on our Vino Lingo segment defining the term typicity.
It's definitely true to say I'm here with one of my favorite people in Napa Valley, Cyrus Hazard, and not only that, but the coolest name in Napa Valley. Cyrus is the Executive Vice President at Crocker and Star in Napa Valley. How you doing?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
Good. Good to be here with you again. We always have a good time when we get together.
Likewise. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Always a lot of fun.
It might have something to do with what's behind you, and it's not a monster, but it can be. No.
Well, wine, right?
Yeah. Wine is a wonderful thing.
And it's Crocker and Star wine. I don't know if there's much better wine out there in this world.
Oh, man. It's fabulous, and especially the Cab Franc. Just one of my favorites. And the bubbles, which have been pretty amazing. So,
yeah.
Pam has done a great job, and after all these years watching it grow, it's been really fun.
Well, you've seen it for a very long time, right? You've been friends with Pam for...
probably about 15, 16
16 years, yeah.
Maybe even a little longer before we started the podcast. Yeah, she's a sweetie and a great supporter of the podcast. I thank you, Pam. I hope you're listening. And if you're not, we're going to have a conversation. So we're here during Premier Week, Premier Napa Valley. Tell me, what the heck is Premier Napa Valley?
It is one of the busiest weeks here in the entire valley and one of the biggest weeks for Napa Valley. Napa Valley Vintners Association puts together a series of events, and we as members of the Vintners Association contribute wine and contribute a lot of fun for visitors coming in from all over the country and all over the world to purchase some of the most prolific and rarest lots of Napa Valley Cabernet ever to be produced.
And where does that money go?
The money goes back to the Vintners Association. Which is what we like, because that helps us get our name out there and continue to, you know, expand people's brains about what is truly Napa Valley. Because it's not just wine, but we're a very small valley. There's 150,000-ish people here, and, you know, we can only get on the road so often.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about our business, Ray, right, we're 7 employees. You know, me and Pam get on the road. Those are the two people that get on the road.
Well, I don't think people always appreciate that, you know, in the end, you have to sell what you make or it's not going to jump off the shelf by itself. But it's that effort that's a pretty big deal.
Well, where the wine, as in a lot of things that people actually can consume, it's a passion first, right? And,
right.
You know, it's passion before purpose in a lot of senses, right? We want to make great wine. We make Cabernet Franc, which you mentioned earlier. That's passion first. That's not a business plan, as Pam will tell you.
Mm,
you don't make Cabernet Franc and become a bazillionaire in the wine business. You make Cabernet Sauvignon if you're a Napa, and that's how you're really going to grow your brand. But we love Cab Franc. We love Cabernet Sauvignon too, but, you know.
But it's an interesting thing to point that out to people, because anybody who knows anything about the Valley, Cab is king, not just because it's such a great wine, but because it's the big moneymaker. So when a lot of winemakers go off to make anything different, Albarino, Tempranillo, you know, that stuff isn't exactly going to be bringing home the bacon.
No, but those wines do bring people interested in variety, right?
And there you go.
And that's important, because if you just made one wine, some people have made a living doing that here in the Valley. But we know that, you know, as generations change and people get older, so the younger generations come in, and I talk about it more in age groups than I would talk about it for generations, just because I think when you turn 40 and you move to the suburbs and you have kids and you get married, you tend to do more entertaining at home, and then wine becomes a more a bigger part of your life, because scotch and bourbon and whiskey at high proof, it's not common that people carry that all the way through their life, right?
Right.
You graduate to something that's a little more healthy, goes with a meal, and wine does that. But if you have one wine and you go into one house, that's all they know, and that's all they're ever going to buy. They're going to look elsewhere. So variety is important so that, you know, people stay connected.
Are there still many wineries here in Napa doing single varietals like that? Or a single wine, I should say.
Most of them have one or two wines. On the super top tier, you can think of a few that have expanded and made sub-brands.
Yeah.
But, for example, you know, there's a winery in Oakville, one of the most prolific ones, makes two wines.
They do.
And those are the only two wines they make. I mean, the first and a second label.
We had a mind meld all of a sudden there. I think you know who we're talking about.
Yeah. And that model works well. Those were the original cult wines of Napa. They give quite a bit of notoriety so that the rest of us can, you know, grow.
Yeah. Now, we've talked before about your getting into the wine business. Let's just go through a little bit of that again, how you ended up meeting Pam and getting into this particular part of the business, because you're in a really great place for a really great winery.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story. I still find it fascinating that I made it out of Humboldt County, which is known for something completely different. Mm. And I worked my way down. I was a grocer. I'm bagging groceries at Safeway. That was what I started doing. And for me, it was a way to go out on a date that wasn't coffee. It was a public place. It was a fun place to visit. And so we'd go out tasting wine on my, you know, on my days off. And eventually I moved to Napa working for Safeway. And I was store manager at the one in Napa. And a recruiter came to me and said, hey, you want to work for this fancy place called Dina De Luca? And I was like, Dina what?
Yeah.
And so I ran the Dina De Luca here in St. Helena for late 90s, early 2000s. So before press was around, I was running that store. In fact, the story behind that is I had to open the burger joint license to keep the food license alive for press before it opened.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. And from there, I fell in love with wine because I was on the retail side. I did what I knew. I would stay over there with the cheese and the charcuterie and coffee and the stuff that I understood. And then finally, Leslie Rudd said, hey, Cyrus, you need to get on the other side and learn about wine.
Hmm.
And I said, okay.
Twist my arm.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't understand it well enough then. Now, boy, that was a major turning point in my life. I tasted 2 days a week. I would taste between 50 and 100 wines a day, and I fell in love with it, all portions of it.
This is a really important point. When you talk about tasting 50 wines a day, this is tasting, this is not drinking, this is taking an analytical attitude or approach to it. And this is where people like you develop really fine palates, because like anything else, it's experience.
Mm-hmm. You can't do it without tasting a lot of wine. You know, people always go, oh my Lord, how did you know that, Cyrus? Well, I taste 50 wines a day or 100 wines a day. And, you know, from that experience I had at Dina De Luca, I found that one wine that went, oh, wow.
Yeah.
The aha moment wine, as people will say. And that wine just catapulted me into spending more time over there, getting very passionate about that business and learning enough to be dangerous and then start to collect a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to, like, squirrel away bottles and wait for a rainy day or wait till it was perfectly mature, which, of course, there's never a perfect day. The perfect day is when you're thirsty for it.
The day
it, right?
You crack it. Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to. The wine at that stage I was a sponge. And I would sit in that wine room and I would learn. People would show up there, like, you know, here comes Philippe Melka in the late 90s with a half bottle of wine. He says, hey, this is coming out soon. It's called 100 Acre. And there's a half bottle of the first finish to taste, see if you want to carry it. So it was really an interesting time in the Valley, too, in the late 90s, early 2000s, because it was taking off with a lot of new brands and really, really incredible wine.
You know, they say timing is everything. You really came in at the right time.
It was timing, yeah.
Yeah,
totally.
That's impressive. Well, yeah. It's cool to be able to look back at that because you did garner this experience and you also met some really wonderful people.
Yeah. A lot of wonderful people. And I left. After that, I was like, okay, I'm ready to go explore the world. I go to Portland. So I spend 2-3 years in Portland. Nothing to do with wine other than buying wine and collecting. I worked for Walmart. And I opened up stores, so I'd hire 400 or 500 people in a trailer in the parking lot and then build the building and then open it up, be there for 2-3 months, go to the next building. And from there, I got recruited to the Turks and Caicos, so Providenciales. They wanted me to build a Dean and DeLuca-type store for Grace Bay, which I designed. And yes, it was quite the boondoggle. It was hard work, but it was a really great experience. Wow. And from there, I moved to D.C. because I met a girl.
Girls will do that to you.
They will. Yeah. So I followed her to D.C. She didn't want to move to Napa. I really wanted to come back
here. She didn't want to come to Napa? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Now she is. She loves it here.
But good.
Yeah. So I fell into she takes me into a store. I fell into this Total Wine & More gig and didn't even think about it, really. I was there. I said, oh, I'm done with wine. I'm, you know, with wine on the retail side. I'm going to go do distribution or work in a restaurant. I want to do something different, another portion of the wine business. Mm. And she took me into the Springfield Total Wine & More, and I went, where am I? It was like Disneyland
really
for adults.
Yeah.
Thousands and thousands of labels. And when you're here in Napa, you're always interested in knowing these wines. And when you move out of the area and you know, back there, it's European wines. The D.C. Metro is very much European-driven. And so I got to learn a lot about wine. So I applied for the job. 2 weeks later, I get started running a store, I'm a wine manager for them. And then, you know, and then eventually I convinced one of the owners that they need to find wine sales program.
Hmm.
And so David Trone, after a year of me sort of nudging him to move along, said, okay, you go do that.
Inch by inch.
Yeah. So I started this program called Concierge Sales, which still exists today and
that's great.
Thriving. Wow. And it's a private client business for Total Wine. So it's kind of like the jewel, the crown jewel on top is Concierge Sales. And so it's wine collectors, Bordeaux Futures, a lot of Napa Valley wines. In fact, Total Wine was the number one bidder, had the number one paddle for P&V for many, many years.
That's not surprising. Yeah. It's an interesting story. Obviously very retail-oriented, but, I mean, that's one hell of a work background.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, it's fun.
and to be able to do what you're doing here requires that kind of a background. This is not something somebody just gets out of their, you know, in the morning, puts their bunny slippers on and does this. There's more to, or maybe you do have bunny slippers. I shouldn't say that.
No, I don't.
I just wanted to step aside for a moment here. We don't go into that. But I'm sure our listeners are hearing the noise in the background. We are not making popcorn. This is rain continuing for every interview, but that's what happens occasionally this time
of
year.
And it's a great time of year to get rain, honestly.
It is a very good time. The vines are still taking a snooze, so hopefully they're not going to be bothered by it.
Yeah. So last, right, how did I get here, which is your first question.
Exactly.
All that background leads me up to a day in D.C. We had friends, because I lived out here before, friends that had small labels. They come to D.C. and they put on this large event that a retailer back there started. And I met Pam. Actually, my wife met Pam and then drugged me over there to meet Pam. And that was 16, 15 years ago, and it was just friends right away. Yeah. My wife invites her to our wedding, which is the next month. And, you know, next thing you know, we're flying out here every year to visit my family, and we visit with Pam and her husband, Norm, and we'd stay with them for a couple of nights, go see my family, and come back. And over the years, as I'm building this concierge sales business for Total Wine, Pam gets to hear about it because I'm telling her every time how excited I am and what's going on and how incredible the business has become when I thought it would never take off. And she says, hey, why don't you come out and take over running my winery for me? And at first I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And then I realized I had to ask my spouse too, because it's a partnership,
it
right?
It is, yeah.
And so it took us about 5 years to make that happen. And
what year was that?
When I got out here was 2021. Okay. So take that 5 years back. So yeah, it was 2021 minus 5 is...
Oh, don't ask me to.
Yeah,
16?
This is my 16? Yeah, 2016, 20, yeah.
Take my fingers and cut.
It was the year the winery was built.
Okay.
Because when I got here the first time, there was no winery.
Right, I remember that. In fact, I remember when Pam took us back to the building in the back.
Yeah.
And that's when Griffin was still around. It was a wonderful experience to just spend some time. We interviewed there, I remember, because it was a echo chamber. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space.
It is. And you're lucky to work for somebody like Pam because she's always struck me as the kind of person that will give you as much rope as you would like to hang yourself multiple times. And but still support you, you know, 100%. At least that's how she strikes me as a outsider, I would say.
She's incredible. Yeah, I mean, she's one of my best friends. Get to work together, which is also, you know, not a normal combination that works. But she's, she built this thing from scratch.
Yeah, she really did.
Charlie was supportive, but Pam wrote the business plan. Pam built this place. And, you know, I came in with the knowledge that, you know, I was going to be able to sit next to someone who has done this. Mm-hmm. And I'll have the founder giving me advice and giving me the history, not through a third person channel. So you're learning it first person from someone. And there's no better way to learn a business.
I totally agree. And Pam, if she is anything, she is passionate.
Yeah. About everything, not just wine.
Oh, no.
Everything.
Well, she exudes it. And, yeah. You know, she's high energy, but yet very much in control of what she's talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So I've asked this question a couple times on this particular tour, and I'm curious to get your take on it. And that is, do we sometimes spend too much time comparing American wines to French wines, to always making that referral, well, this is a Bordeaux, well, this is a Burgundy, when we're making damn fine wines here in the States?
I've been asked that question a lot, Ray, over the years. The answer, yeah, I mean, look, everybody can compare something to another. I think that's frankly absurd. Wine comes from each place. Terroir, its own soil, its own location. You may like what you get in Bordeaux. I certainly like Bordeaux.
Sure.
You know, I love Burgundy too. But do I compare that to Napa Valley Cabernet or Napa Valley Merlot? No, never, because they're two totally different things. Mm. They do, when you come into planning your food or, you know, your guests, you might choose one over the other, depending on who you're going to see. But on a preference, last night I had a bottle of Bordeaux, and, you know, the night before I had a bottle of Arcab Franc. So, you know, it's not, there's room for everyone, right? There's always room for all of them, and you should be diverse in what you choose to consume.
Totally agree. Those who don't want to try certain wines are really losing out.
Variety's the spice of life. Everybody said that before.
It's true.
Right?
Yeah, I've heard that somewhere. Yeah, that was Shakespeare, wasn't it? Or
yeah,
was
maybe
it Paul
it was.
McCartney? I don't know.
Yeah.
One of those guys.
Either way, wine is that exact thing. So, yeah. You know, people, and it goes back to the beginning of what we talked about, where it's like, oh, we don't just make Cabernet. You were talking about Albarinos. Well, we make Sauvignon Blanc, two different versions of that. We make sparkling wine that you referenced, Cab Franc at a more economical level, or estate Cab Franc, mm-hmm. the original, and then Cabernet Sauvignon. So that there's something to eat and consume with anything you're in, any situation you're in.
Sure.
And the same thing goes, like, we don't just drink our own wines.
No, I hope not.
Yeah. Otherwise, we'd be in a very small bubble.
It would be boring.
Tiny little bubble. Yeah.
These are wonderful wines, but, you know, I have talked to countless winemakers who said, I never order my own wine at a restaurant. Well, of course not, because in the end, you're checking out what the competition's doing and also appreciating the art of wine as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Variety is so important.
It really is. Okay. And the Sauvignon Blanc you guys are making here is fabulous. I think it is truly one of the best Napa Valley Sauvignon Blancs you can find. Why is Chardonnay so misunderstood?
You think it is?
I think some people, well, you get the, you know, ABC, and which, for our listeners, that's anything but Chardonnay. And granted, there are areas that don't make great Chardonnay. There are places that make it that'll blow your brain open. But mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding with it, and I don't quite get that.
Yeah, I don't find Chardonnay to be misunderstood. I think there's just a lot of different ways and styles of making Chardonnay. And I think we see them in the value end. It's like we're grateful for large companies making swaths of Chardonnay because then nobody's drinking seltzers or other stuff. They're mm-hmm. drinking wine, which means they have an easier path to find their way to us as
right.
they mature in their wine consumption. You know, you have Chablis, which is Burgundy. You know, it's a different step into Burgundy. You could think about Beaune and Corton and other places for, you know, for white. It's all Chardonnay. It tastes very different than the Chardonnays we produce on the Sonoma Coast or in Carneros. I think it's people look at brands for Chardonnay more than they look at grape variety.
I would agree with that. Nobody's ever said that to me before, but that's true.
Yeah, because if you're drinking Chardonnay, you're really not. I mean, the large brands, obviously, you're consuming something that you believe is your style, but also you feel good about consuming because it's consistent. When you go from place to place, you can get it. And a lot of Chardonnay is consumed in restaurants versus people homes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And that's because it's you can buy it by the glass and it's economical, I think.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very commonly easy find. It's not necessarily so much that it's a common wine, it's an easy one to get.
And it's consistent.
It is that. I agree. Always like to get into this question. It's my favorite question. I ask virtually everybody we talk to. You get to talk to media. You talk to plenty of people who come here to the tasting room. You get asked a lot of questions. What is the one question you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
That is a tough question, Ray.
I don't make them easy.
No, it's a good question. It's a great question.
Thank you.
The challenge, obviously, is you do see a lot of people, like you say, and people ask a lot of interesting questions. I always get asked, well, how did you get in the wine business? And what's my favorite wine? Now I'm stumped, Ray, because I've been thinking about it and I've forgotten about it. Because when someone says I've never been asked, the first thing that pops in my brain is, what question do I keep getting asked that I don't like? And I gotta turn that brain around and stick it the other way. Because they always ask, not always, but a lot of people ask you, how the hell did you get in this business?
Yeah, sure.
But no one ever asked me, what did I really want to do, I guess, right? What did I think I was going to do when I got out of high school and started going to college? There's the question
there
answered.
The question.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no one ever asked me that.
So what
they're
did
like,
you
oh, my
do?
God. I wanted to grow weed.
An honorable profession.
I was from Humboldt County. It was just, you know, I wanted to grow things. I didn't know. Honestly, you're so young back then. It was really weed what it is. I probably was destined for agriculture in some form or another from the beginning because I like being outside.
Well, at least now it's a little bit safer.
Yeah, it wouldn't have. I mean, obviously, my brain turned around on itself. I got into, you know, making money in a real fashion because back then you couldn't do that.
No, not without there being potentially,
yeah,
terrible circumstances. That
right, and it's an interesting business for sure.
Yeah.
As you know, and I'm sure that's come up. There's a lot of people that are now the younger generation that are starting to use more marijuana and drink less, and there's some concern, but that's not really the reality. Is they use them in conjunction, it's agriculture in the end.
Can't go into any hotel anymore without wafting in the halls. Okay, I made the joke at the beginning, and I really shouldn't joke about people's names, but Cyrus Hazard is just a cool name. And you don't meet very many Cyruses in your life, although here in Napa Valley, we have a Cyril, which is close.
Yeah, he's an awesome dude, yeah.
He is an incredible guy, another favorite here in the Valley. But is there a story behind your name?
Yeah, well, parents are hippies.
Ah.
From, you know, the 70s, moved out from the East Coast to Marin County here and decided then, and they didn't know each other, they decided that they liked each other, and the next thing you know, there's three kids. And we all have unique names, and there's no relation. Like Cyrus is obviously it's a Persian name, and in its as far as I can track, that's its origination. But they like to like new names. So Cyrus and is Cyrus the Great, Persian that part of it, and then Hazard is my mother's father's last name, which I took instead of Franklin, because it felt a little ordinary, and I had my choice as a child which one I wanted, so I chose Cyrus Hazard. I liked the Dukes of Hazard at that point.
Mm.
I still do. I'm never going to have a General Lee car or anything, but you know, it was fun.
Well, I think it's fun if you're out in a mall and you get paged.
Yeah.
Hazard, paging Mr. Hazard.
Well, you probably remember these days when the grocery stores used to use the PA to call people.
That's right.
I spent a lot of time in a grocery store.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuntman, I get that one a lot.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, Mr. Hazard.
Yeah.
That would be a good one for a stuntman. I hadn't thought about that. For our listeners to come here to visit on Dowdell Lane and sample these incredible wines, this is by appointment, as I recall. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. And we welcome visitors, so if you call the same day and we're able to fit you in, then we'll make it happen.
Great. And for our listeners to know what that website is, what is that website?
www.crockerstar.com, and that's two R's at the end of star, CrockerStarr.com.
And there is no and in there for the website.
No, ampersand does not exist yet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Cyrus, this is great. Always fun to sit down and chat with you. Appreciate you taking the time on this, again, crazy rainy day.
We love the rain. Thanks, Ray.
Learn more by visiting CrockerStarr.com. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our web geek is Dan Geeshan. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2024.